What if I told you that you can support your blood pressure and healthy CoQ10 levels with two chews a day? The new Super Beats Heart Chews Advanced is now supercharged with CoQ10. That's like getting CoQ10 for free. Our powerful blend of beetroot, grapeseed extract, and CoQ10 supports your cardiovascular health. Visit RadioBeats.com and find out how you can get a free 30-day supply on bundles and save 15% with the promo code DEAL.
The Fed can just print more money out of thin air, but the government's always going to be in debt to the Fed. Always.
Everybody has questions that aren't being answered.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Dangerous World Podcast here. I'm recording this in the early hours of the morning. I've been up for about 30 minutes. So if my voice sounds a little weird, fear not. The rest of the episode does not sound like this, okay? But I had the pleasure of getting to talk with a number one best-selling Amazon author. It's a mouthful. But This was a cool conversation. I usually don't do too many paranormal focused episodes, and that's going to change. This is starting to really, really become more and more interesting to me. Obviously, I mean, I talk with great people that research and study the paranormal. Chaz of the Dead is a guy that I speak with about that pretty often. Nico from Upstate Unconventional, I consider him to be pretty darn knowledgeable when it comes to the paranormal. And some of this more less tangible things that some people say, well, this isn't provable, and you know, you get out your ghost hunting equipment and have a little conversation. But I'm trying to think of other people that I speak with, like those two guys there, that really do know a thing or two about paranormal stuff. Ghost from My Third Eye, he definitely gets into it a little bit. We just have fun conversations when it comes to this stuff. And I usually don't take them too seriously, right? Not the people having the conversation, but the topic. It's usually more of a fun thing. And like I said, it's becoming more and more interesting. So you're probably going to see those guys and, you know, some topics that they get into more and more on my show here, just because it's different. Change the pace up a little bit, right? But I talk with M.R. Gorga here. He's the author of Demons Among Us, Shocking Real Life Stories from the Paranormal. And again, this is a number one best-selling book on Amazon here. And I was honored to have the chance to talk with this dude. We're leading into Halloween. I'm going to try and get him back on with maybe a spooky panel. And we'll have a nice Halloween conversation sometime before the big witch day there. This guy talks about a lot of witchcraft in not only the book, but in this episode. And kind of just runs through what is all in this book here. I'm trying to see if there's a nice description here on Amazon. But yeah, the first fully recorded eyewitness account of demonic possession in American history. This is decades before the Salem witch trials. Real encounters with black spirits, inhuman entities, visions, and terrifying nighttime visitations. And he actually recounts a couple of his own experiences here, and even gets into a story that he hasn't shared on any other show. So I was honored to be the first one to get that one out in an audio version here. And then also how dark forces influence the world around you, how they deceive and destroy and even kill. Are you at risk? Yeah, it's a very, very interesting sounding book. And the author couldn't be more interesting. It was pretty freaking cool to get to talk with somebody like this. I don't want to bore you with a long intro. You know that I appreciate the support over there at patreon.com/dangerousworldpodcast. And I'm getting more and more focused on the podcast itself. I'm actually moving out of my day-to-day grind outside of things like this. I don't want to give too much away, but slowly moving into focusing more and more on this. So your support over there is very much appreciated. And DangerousWorldStore.com. All my designs did get wiped out off of my computer, but I'm in the process of redoing all of those designs. They're all going to be the exact same. It's just a matter of finding the old fonts and getting everything back to how it was. So the store's still up. Your orders may take a little while, but you know I'm a one-man operation here, so it's not next-day delivery anyway. So I appreciate all the support over there at Patreon and at Dangerous World Store, and also five-star reviews. I came ill-prepared here. I don't even know where my phone is. Otherwise, I would read a five-star review right now, but we'll do it next episode because this is already running long. So enjoy this. We do the first hour or so, as always, for free, and then additional content from this episode and about 100 others at this point over there at patreon.com/dangerousworldpodcast. Okay. Thanks, guys. Enjoy the show. Well, let's just roll right into it. Here is M.R. Gorga, awesome author of Demons Among Us, shocking real life stories from the paranormal. Enjoy the show.
What is going on, everybody? I'm very, very honored to have M.R. Gorga on. He's the author of an Amazon number one best-selling book called Demons Among Us, Shocking Real-Life Stories from the Paranormal. Dude, this is going to be a fun episode. This is the perfect time of year. We're just coming into Halloween season, spooky season, as it's called in your community. I've got a buddy that's a paranormal researcher. He refers to it the same way. So, again, can't be thankful enough for your time here, first of all, man. How you doing, dude?
I'm doing good, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. This is going to be a cool conversation.
Yeah, I'm excited.
I want right away for you to plug all of your work. You know, attention spans these days. We got to get them while they're just tuning in. And then right. I have a few questions for you, brother.
All right. Well, the name of my book is Demons Among Us, Shocking Real Life Stories from the Paranormal. It covers a wide swath of the paranormal. I basically ripped the veil off the paranormal to expose what's really happening behind there. And what lurks behind that curtain may truly terrify you. We discussed the first fully documented case of demonic possession in American history, my personal experiences with dark spirits and demonic entities and midnight hauntings, and a whole other, all other kinds of juicy paranormal stuff. And you can find my book on Amazon right now. I have it actually discounted for the ebook for the Kindle version at $3.77. And it's only to the 15th. So if you're going to get the book, get it now. It's really, really discounted. That's on Amazon.com. And you can find me on Instagram at m.r.gorga and at Facebook at mrgorga.
M.R. Gorga. Yeah, dude. No, this is fascinating stuff because my show, normally I don't get into, you know, more paranormal type things like this. I've been really, really obsessed with black magic and politics, which I'm sure we'll touch on in some way throughout this episode because it sounds like we're going to run the gamut through a lot of this kind of talk. Sure. I got to ask, man, what got you into this stuff?
Well, I've been writing since a little kid, and I grew up in New Jersey. And at that time, Amityville Horror was happening and had just come out, and we had the Son of Sam running around. And the fear that kind of spread over up north, you know, spilling out of New York into New Jersey, it was just this really palpable thing. And for some reason, I just believe that these accounts had an indelible kind of effect that, you know, that fed into my writing. And the paranormal was just this so intriguing, you know, that I took to it, you know?
Yeah. Did you have any paranormal experiences when you were a child, or was it mostly like real life, like the killers outside your door type thing? Cause this is kind of the era where people started locking their doors, right?
Exactly. Like, yes. Yeah.
And before that, it was all like, yeah, everyone knows their neighbors and blah, blah, blah. Everyone's cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, did you have any kind of paranormal experiences or just real life stuff that was kind of?
Yeah, at the time when I was a kid, well, I have two like paranormal experiences I talk about as firsts. Okay. First as a kid, first as an adult. So we'll talk about first as a kid. When I was a kid, we, like I said, we lived in New Jersey, and we lived in a two-story house, and on the ground level floor, the first floor, we had a laundry room, and my sisters were playing outside the laundry room at one time. And all of a sudden, this big white hand, ghosty hand, comes out of the laundry room door and tries to grab my sisters. And I'm on the stairs, and I watch them, like, you know, run from the room, like screaming, you know, bloody murder up the steps. And, you know, in my, when my parents came down to look, there was nothing there, but it was so real that, you know, we still talk about it today at holidays and stuff. Hey, remember the white hand, you know? And we were very young. So that was like the very first paranormal experience. And how I got into writing was it for somehow, like, these incidences fed into my writing. And like I told you before, I was writing since I was little. My teacher in second grade gave a writing assignment to us. And so I wrote this story about, I don't know, this mummy on a murder spree. And I handed it, and I'm in like second grade. this is no second, third, or fourth. I was very young. And this was no, you know, content for someone my age to be writing.
No kidding.
By any means. And so I handed in, and I don't know what's going to happen. I'm always going to say. And my parents get a phone call at night, and it's my teacher. And I'm like, oh, man, I'm dead.
So did you grow up in a house where this would not be looked at favorably, or were they just like happy that you were being creative? Because my next question after that is, was the story good?
Well, the story was good because he called up. Like I said, I thought I was going to get in trouble. I was nervous. And on the, so he's talking to him on the phone. He goes, hey, you know, your son has a real talent for writing. You need to enter him into the Young Authors Club immediately. And so
that's awesome.
That's how long I've been writing. And that's how long the, you know, this creepy paranormally kind of stuff has been, you know, I've been at it. So, it was quite the opposite. I was very surprised. I thought I was going to get in trouble. And he ended up, you know, praising me for this crazy story.
What a great teacher. So he kind of helped you get your writing career started. And
did.
I don't know the setting there, like in the school, if they were overly religious. And like I was kind of asking earlier, and feel free to pass on any of these questions if they're too personal or anything like that.
No.
Was that kind of thing? Was that kind of a subject material? Was that something acceptable by your household, like your parents? Or was it kind of more of a religious background?
I grew up in, you know, nominally like Catholic, basically Catholic in name only. They were taking us to church because it would probably be good for the kids, or, you know, but they really had no practice behind it. It was, I don't even know why they went, but it really had no effect or how they lived their lives or guided their, you know, decisions or any way, shape or form. So, but except just going to church.
So they weren't bothered at all. They were just like happy that you were creative and excelling in something at such a young age.
Yeah. I don't remember them saying anything about the subject matter, but they did. They were excited that, you know, I had a gift or a talent at a very early age. Yeah.
Well, good for you, dude. That's pretty freaking cool, honestly. Like just coming up with something like that so young, and then.
Yeah.
You know, obviously the story about the childhood, but then, so what about this first paranormal experience as an adult? You said that was very different and it seemed like this shapes your career quite a bit too.
Yeah. Well, my first experience, first of all, let me just set the backdrop. I'm a believer in Jesus Christ. And so when I first, decided to become a believer, I knew nothing about God. I knew nothing about, you know, even though we had the Catholic background, it didn't mean anything.
Sure.
So I knew nothing about nothing, you know, about anything. Right. And so I become a believer. I accept Jesus Christ. And My very first time in prayer, I don't know what prayer is. I don't even know how to do it. I don't know what it sounds like. I don't know what in the world to do. And so, right, yeah, and just, I'm talking into the air, right? Yeah. And so I'm at my bed, and it's one of those prayers like, God, I don't even know if you're real kind of prayers, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
And so as I'm in prayer, I feel something enter the room, and it's this creepy, eerie kind of feeling, and it comes right up behind my ear, my right ear, and I'm like, I don't want to look behind me, but I know something's there, and so I scrunch my shoulder. Like to kind of like shirk it away, you know, like shoot whatever it was, shoo it away. And then, you know, a second or so later, a voice spoke and says, you may have gone to God, but you belong to me. I'm never going to let you go. You will always be mine. And it was the voice of a demonic spirit, whether it was Satan himself or a demonic spirit. It was as clear as I'm speaking to you. But, you know, Hollywood makes a real show of like what demon voices sound like sure. Making them all hoarse and gravelly. This was nothing of the sort. This was very princely and silvery, baritone and regal. There was authority behind it, and it was placid. But underneath this placidity was, you could sense this stream of cunning evil. And so it was like the words were, it literally made you believe these words. That's how much power that it had. So it was as clear as day as I'm speaking to you. That's as clear as it spoke into my ear.
And you said this was a masculine voice. It was a male.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Masculine for sure.
That is freaking weird. Cause I mean, why do you think that this entity would be approaching you when you're saying a prayer? Cause like, I mean, you said it yourself, you don't know what you're doing when you're saying this prayer. It's not like you're some devout, you know, follower of Jesus at that time. Maybe you are now. Right. Right? Yeah. But, do you think it was coming to you because of maybe your talent and maybe kind of your interest in the darkness and this paranormal stuff? Or do you think it was just because you were wishy-washy on your faith and it was trying to attack while you were still fresh?
Well, what happens is, when you decide to become a follower or a believer in Jesus Christ, basically what happens is like you change teams. So you don't have to be bowing down to Satan statues or anything to be under the governance or the principles of Satan. You just have to be out of the will of God. And that means you are operating in that realm without even knowing it. And so what happens is, you know, you just think you're going about your things and, you know, but you're influenced by it and you don't even know. Right. So what happens is like you change teams. And when you change teams, you now have a mortal enemy, and he's going to stop that at all costs. And what the Bible says is that the devil comes to steal the seed that was planted in you. And so and that's what it was. It comes immediately to steal the seed. So what it was a demonic attack right at the beginning to try to thwart you out of the things of God. And, you know, so, and when you decide to become a follower, you put a target on your back, and now, you know, there's a notion out there is like, well, you're religious or you're a believer, nothing like that's going to happen. That's quite the opposite. The deeper you go and the higher you go, and the more you seek, the bigger this threat becomes. So you become a threat to this demonic kingdom.
Yeah.
He's out at all costs to take you out of the game. That's why.
So for me personally, you know, I like the idea of Jesus. I tend to think he was very real. I am a fan of like the teachings and things that I've learned, and mostly the things that I've gone out and seeked myself. I think a lot of the things that we learn in churches, excuse my language, is kind of bullshit. I think that a lot of the major religions,
a good word.
Yeah. They stray a lot of people away and they're very satanic. I mean, these big yes. religious churches are horrible.
100%
the things they do to children and the things that they do to weak people and people that just are asking for help. So I tend to very much follow Jesus in that way. However, I consider myself agnostic. I know, and I've heard it said that the devil loves an atheist, right? In your opinion, does he feel the same way about an agnostic individual? Am I kind of like playing a little bit into the devil's plan by not necessarily picking a side?
Yeah, to not choose a side is choosing a side. And okay. the more ignorant that the person or individual is, the better. And what I say on programs all the time is that just the less you know, or the more ignorant that you are to his reality and his schemes and his governments, that makes individuals a better pawn, because these satanic forces and demonic forces need people to operate through. They're not walking around like hairy monsters. Yeah. They need people to work through. And so the people who remain ignorant to these realities, these are the better pawns for the demonic advancements.
That's interesting, man. I need to look into it more then, because I've kind of like gone about my life just thinking that, you know, like I said, I lean towards the idea of Jesus, and I choose good over evil 10 times out of 10.
Yeah.
But it's and I do recognize like the dark forces, like you said a word there that stood out to me, government, the satanic governments. I don't know if you meant that literally, like the government of the United States is satanic. I would say it is.
Well, it's a government. It's when you think about how the demonic forces and the demonic realm works, it's a government, right? So you have Lucifer or Satan as its head, and then you have all of the offices and underlings underneath in operation. Yeah. So basically, hierarchy. It's basically President Lucifer, right? For sure. And then everything gets disseminated out in, you know, out, and it's a government, and people don't realize they're actually under this government, because if they're out of the will of God, they're under the government of Satan. So,
wow.
Yeah. And so, and that's what people don't really understand. I'm like, well, I don't bow down to demon statues or, you know, or things of that nature, or, you know, you don't have to, you just don't have to believe not in God to be under the influence. And so, if you can look at the demonic realm as influencer marketing, and if I was, and we all know how influencer marketing works, right? You take a guy who's really popular, right? And then he says, hey, check out this product. And he sends it out to like his millions of followers, right? And it's the same way in the spirit realm, where it's like, if I was a smart devil or a smart demon, who would I use?
Well, attractive people that have influence. Yeah.
100%. I would use presidents. I would use lawmakers, heads of state, lawmakers, judges, musicians, actresses, and actors.
Yeah, okay.
Everyone popular. You're starting to see it. This is how it works.
Wow. Okay. I've never heard it put like that. It makes a lot more sense.
Yeah. I mean, once we're able to kind of look at this thing, like, you know, objective. Well, no one's really ever thought of like, how does this demonic world work? Right? Yeah. So it's not something that really enters into the realm of thinking, because you don't know. First of all, you just don't know all this stuff is happening around you, because it's behind the veil.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But once you're able to know and understand how these things work, it becomes very, 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 very clear.
Now, do you believe that the governments of this world, in particular the United States government, I feel like they're hands down still the most powerful out there. Maybe that'll be changing soon. Do you think that these governments of the world use black magic to control their citizens and things like that?
I think the people are under the influence of evil, whether knowingly or unknowingly. I do think that there are practices in high places. I don't know who, but I believe that there are. And there's some who just think they're going about and agreeing to their, you know, to going along with whatever plan or scheme that they are. But these ideas, and a lot of these ideas, are hatched by evil, whether knowingly or unknowingly. Sure. Now there's people who know, and then there's people who don't know. And so, but yeah, I believe that there's spiritual, Bible talks about spiritual wickedness in high places. That's not the sky. That's in the public forum, you know, society.
And it sounds like it's our responsibility to find this out and to know. And so if we see somebody that's in like a mid-level position in this evil demonic structure of government, unknowingly carrying out acts that the ones in the know are kind of, you know, putting onto these people, these pawns,
yeah,
they're just as guilty, even though they may not know. Is that kind of what you're getting at?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, that's okay. Correct. Because it's our responsibility to know, understand, and to question, right? You know, it's like that, the excuse, what Himmler was like, oh, I'm just following orders.
Exactly.
Like, what, you have no conscience?
Yeah.
You have nothing checking you inside that this might be wrong, right?
Man, how much do we see that today? You know?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Well, that's exactly the reason why I wrote Demons Among Us is to open the eyes of people who are may or may not understand or know that they that evil and dark forces are functioning all around them, and that they might be influenced by it without even know it, you know. So that was one of the main reasons why I wrote the book, was to just shed the light on what was happening. And the reason this came about was because I was going through a series of nighttime demonic assaults. It was for like a week or 10 days. I forget. I don't know how many days it was, but, you know, I was going through midnight stranglings with like cold steel hands, invisible hands, you know, choking me, and evil whisperings, you know, to try to speak things, evil things into your, you know, into your psyche. You know, bitings and just a host of strange things happening at night. And I know that these things don't want the light shed on them. So my answer to those episodes is Demons Among Us, because they're going to hit, I'm going to hit back. And so that's why I wrote Demons Among Us.
Hell yeah. So this was going on before or during your writing of this book?
Yeah. Well, this was the pretty much the single most thing that caused me to write the book was these episodes. So it was, you know, I know that they don't want to be exposed, and so I said, all right, you're gonna hit me, I'm gonna hit back. And
that's fascinating.
And so, and that's why I wrote Demons Among Us.
Gee, man, it's freaky to think, because yeah, like, I mean, for me, I haven't had any paranormal experiences myself. So I find them difficult to believe in 100%. Just because it hasn't happened to me doesn't mean that they're not real.
Right. Right.
Can you get more into these things a little bit? And then I'd love to get into any parts of the book that you're interested in. I'm dying to find out about this first exorcism in the United States.
Yeah, but tell me where you want to go. I mean,
well, I want to find out more about these attacks on you. You mentioned like things that did this seem like some sort of like succubus type thing, like sitting on top of you type thing, choking you?
There was starts with basically invisible hands. They're like iron, and
cold
they're
metal. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like iron. You can't pry it off, but you start choking, because you're being strangled, right? So there is that. And at the same time, there's this level of palpable fear that overwhelms, that comes off of these spirits. And so basically it paralyzes you in fear at the same time. And what it does is it takes your breath away from speaking or crying out. So for a minute there, you literally think that you're going to die.
Yeah.
And, you know, and so, but finally you're able to eke something out. Right. Yeah. And, but Jesus is, once you call on the name of Jesus, he has given such an undescribable power to the believer. She says, I give you power to trample on snakes and scorpions and all the power of the enemy. So he has endued his followers and his believers with this indescribable power to take authority and to cast these demonic beings out who are so superior in intellect, strength, and might than you or I. But he's given this supernatural power to cast them out, that to overwhelm them, to overtake them.
Yeah, it's like the Mario, like when you eat the mushroom, you grow bigger, and then like you're more powerful. You can do, you know,
yeah,
like, that's what it sounds like. So yeah. when these things are choking you, and it sounds like you said yourself, it feels like you're going to die. Not for 1 second. It feels like of natural causes. It doesn't feel like a heart attack. It doesn't feel like you're choking on something. It feels like there is something invisible choking you there.
Yeah, there's something in the room, and you know it. You know, like when you know that someone's in the room.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's basically that with this, you know, indescribable fear and like this angst kind of feeling. So it's also the feeling that overtakes the room as well.
And so you have a lot of these experience or these accounts also in the book.
Yeah, I have one of the experiences is I'll go into that now.
Yeah.
One of the most frightening experiences I've ever had. This happened when I was I had lost my job at the marketing department of a local newspaper, and so that meant I needed to move out of my apartment, and so I moved into I moved back out west, and I moved into a house that it belonged to my family, but they had left it, and it was sitting there for like 6 months. So when I pulled up, it literally looked like the Munsters could have lived there, or the Addams family. I mean, it literally had every hallmark of a haunted house.
Dust and, everywhere, dark.
Let's just start from the outside. Overgrown brown grass.
Okay, of course.
Right? Overgrown brown grass. And I'll never forget it. The door, the fence was all dilapidated and colorless, you know, raw wood. And the fence was even creaking in the breeze, like on one hinge. It's like, and I'm like, oh my God. And to make matters worse, there are these two block windows on either side, square windows, and they looked over the property like these two vacant eyes. And it was very reminiscent of the Amityville Horror. And so I'm like, oh man. Okay, all right. So I go in and I'm there for a little bit. And I don't know how long or whatever. But I, you know, when I walk in, it looks like they never left. I mean, there's toys in there. There's bills on the table. There's milk in the fridge and pots in the sink. It literally looked like they went to the store and they were coming back. But it was very, very heartbreaking. And so this is what I walked into. And so I take the room on the upstairs, which is the master bedroom. And one night, I go to bed and I'm laying down and I start to smell something, which is really rotten smell, rotten with like this chemical gassy kind of note to it.
Sure.
And I'm like, what the heck is that? So I get up and I'm like sniffing around the room and there's nothing upstairs. And I go downstairs and look in the garbage. There's no garbage. You know, in the garbage disposer, there's nothing there. So I look up at the air vent and I'm like, and it's coming from the air vent. And so I get a chair, I hike up on the chair and I put my face to the vent and it's just black rot, you know, it's just rotten smell, just rotting death breathing onto my face. Oh. And I'm like, oh man. And so I hike down and I'm very suspicious something's going on at this point.
Yeah.
So I get off the chair, I cut the power to the AC, I get back on the chair, and the thing is still blowing directly into my face without any mechanical or any electricity aiding it. So it's blowing out by itself now. And I'm like, oh, mother.
I go up there.
And I'm like, so I know I'm in for something this night. Right? Yeah. And so I go back upstairs and I try to go back to sleep, and I'm on my side. And as I'm on my side, I hear something call my name, and it says, you know, it says, Michael, really slow, really serpentine, and really like evil and creepy. But it sounds as far away as it does near. So it sounded like it was coming from like the back of a cave. But echoey. Yet it sounded, yeah, echoey, yeah. But it was, it sounded very near, but very far, if yeah. you can, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, at the same time, both near and far. And I'm like, I'm not rolling over.
Okay.
So, I feel something in the room. So I roll over. And when I look up, there's this thing looming over my bed. And it's a black robed figure, and it's tall, it's lanky with crooked shoulders, and its head is cocked, and it's looking down with this broad smile, and his, you could see his face set back deep in the cowl of its head, but you could see the face, the semblance of a face, and it's looking down at me with this broad smile, and then I feel something on my chest. And I look down, and there's this clawed hand moving up my chest, and it's going to choke me. And it's just looking at me like some demented doctor, like, like a patient in a bed, you know? And I'm, and the fear and the hate that was coming over the, off of this thing was overwhelming. It was, you know, not only did I feel the hatred like in the room, but it was also through my body. I felt it through my body, like boiling hot tar. So you could feel the whatever that power is emanating off of it. And I can't cry out. Like I said before, I'm just paralyzed, like with fear. And I glanced down at its gown or its robes, you know, and it wasn't tatters. It wasn't shredded cloths or anything like that. It was actually neat rectangular strips that went from black to darker, gray black to darker, like in layers, and it got blacker the more layers it went. It got blacker, and it was a flowy, watery motion to the bottom of its gown. And it was weird because it was like, as much as it was physical, was as much as it was spiritual, meaning mm-hmm. that there was a bottom of the portion of that gown that I could see through. It was very ghostly kind of at that section. And so, and the reason why this was the most frightening experience was because this was the first time I'd ever felt anything of like the, you know, the physical form, like touch my physical form. I felt chokings and stuff, but this was the first time it's manifested from the spiritual into the natural and physically touching me as real as I could touch anybody else. And so that was my most terrifying account.
And I put I can't imagine it getting worse. I mean, how you say like this, why this, I mean, that's gotta be incredibly scary when you're in this house that you say it was a family house, but no one is occupying the house. It is interesting to me that the electricity was on and all this stuff too. That was one of my questions that I had, but I mean, you cleared that up.
Yeah.
Do you think that these entities, like this one in particular, do you think that they're from other dimensions or maybe in like some sort of parallel universe, or is it something that's always here, but it's for some reason manifests to people like yourself that seem to have like more of an incline to see these things? Like I said, I've never seen one. Maybe I don't believe in them, and this is why I don't see them. But I hear stories from a lot of people like yourself that, and it seems like if you see it once, you see it multiple times. Yeah. So I guess my first question would be, do you think they come from this realm or somewhere else?
Well, they're fallen angels. So what demons are actually these highly intellectual, highly powerful, and highly influential beings, angelic beings, that fell from heaven. And to speak biblically for a second, what happened was that the angel Lucifer held the highest position in heaven. He was a guardian of God's throne. So he dwelt in the presence where not everybody could go, in the presence of God, because
it's God's most prized creation before humans, right?
Well, we could talk about this in a second, but he was God's most beautiful, most powerful, most influential creation ever created, okay. Right? Being ever created. And so he had waged a war in heaven because of his beauty, he was exalted in his pride. He became very prideful. And so he decides to wage a war in heaven because he wants to be God. He said, I will be as God. I'll sit on the mount of the congregations of the north, and I will be like the Most High, and I will exalt my name above the stars and all that stuff. So he has incredibly vain. And so he wages this war. He draws a third of the angels to his cause, however many they are, billions upon billions.
Sure.
Lo and behold, the angels fought against other angels, and ultimately they were cast. The Satan and Lucifer's angels were cast out of heaven to the earth. Now, a misconception is that Satan is in hell. He's not in hell. That's hell is reserved for the punishment at a due time. That's a jail sentence, a death sentence in a sense, created for rebellious spirits, and both human and spiritual. And so hell was a created place by God that he's going to send the devil in due time at the judgment. It's one of the judgments he talks about, right? There's a great white throne judgment. There's another judgment. But so anyway, he gets cast into, that's where he's going as a prison sentence. He's not going to rule it. He's not sitting there now ruling it with a pitchfork. That's going to be his jail sentence. Where he was cast was to the cosmos and to the earth. So he believes that this earth is his home. And so when he takes over like a person or whatever, or is influencing these forces or influencing people in some form or way, when they're encountered, the demon will believe that they belong there. Like, well, they invited me in. This is mine. Like, I belong here, right? So it's like, so whatever vice you might have, that's actually an entryway for a demonic stronghold or a grip, right?
Yeah.
And so Satan himself and his angels were cast to the earth, and this is where they operate now.
So
I forget the original question.
No, it was. I mean, you answered it. You nailed it there. I was asking if the entity that you were interacting with on that in very interesting night, if it was of this realm or if it was not, or if it was something that was kind of here always but manifested in this weird way. It sounds like I said, you nailed it. When you say the cosmos and Earth, I think right away of like as above, so below. It's something that I think is really powerful in all this stuff, right?
I mean, and that was that attack was actually a very specific spirit. That was the spirit of witchcraft.
This one that was interacting with you.
Yeah. That was the spirit of witchcraft, because what happened? So when I was finally able to speak again, I called on Jesus, and I just saw this thing like melt. It folded into itself like tiny droplets, like mist in a sense. That's how powerful the name of Jesus is. So it's like, and it just folded into itself and vanished. Huh. It was crazy. And so when I finally shot up and I said, what the fuck was that? it was shot directly in my spirit. That was the spirit of witchcraft. So when you have access to God, people find it really weird, like, oh, he's from God, he's crazy. It's like, no, you through Jesus Christ, you have been reconnected to God to hear from him. So to me, it's the most natural thing in the world to hear from the creator of heaven and earth and everything and everyone on it. It's not a bizarre thing. It's what he wants. He wants to speak to you. He wants to speak to humanity. Yeah. But And so, but that's how I look at it. But yeah, so he shot that directly into my spirit. That was witchcraft.
Wow. I mean, yeah, you make a great point there that it is very natural to talk to God and for God to talk through people. It's just so unfortunate that so many people abuse that and they lie about it, right? A lot of people, mostly big religious figures and people that are trying to gain some fame, seem to lie about this. And it's really corrupted the idea. So it's unfortunate.
It has. And it's unfortunate. And I, you know, I think the modern church and mega churches, they've just become this circus. And so you really have to work hard at not being influenced, you know, by it, that they're not functioning under the Spirit or under the Holy Spirit or by Jesus by any means. And so if you're a follower, you really have to keep your eyes on Jesus, not the church.
Sure. I agree with that. I agree with that 100%. So back to your book more, how is this thing, how did you write it out? Like in the different sections? I know I really, like I said, I'm really interested in this demonic possession case, the first one. Can you tell us a little bit more about like some of the different sections that you have, like your personal accounts, and just some of the other sections?
Yeah, it starts off with, like an introduction, of the American obsession with, the paranormal, movies and, you know, and things of that nature. So I talk about how we are all in some form or fashion, darkly fascinated by these dark things. You know, it's like watching a train wreck, right? It's like, and so we're a car crash, can't keep your eyes off it. And for some reason, we all have this innate thing in us that's completely fascinated, you know, by it. And if the box offices are anything to tell, there's a lot of interest in it. And I list some numbers and some sales and everything like that. I paint that picture. And then I go into chapter two, which is it's called American Demoniac. And it's the first fully documented eyewitness account of demonic possession in American history. And it was reported, 2 decades before the Salem witch trials in early New England, just to paint the picture.
Yeah.
And the story is between the town minister, at the time, and he was a young guy. He started at 25, but this happened, I think, when he was like around 30, 33, he was a minister of the town for a while. And it's between him and his 16-year-old maid or maid servant, which they were called at the time. She was a live-in maid to the town minister, and it was a little community in the woods of Massachusetts, surrounded by, you know, natives and things of that nature. So, I mean, we're talking about a very, very small, tight-knit community. And he was the minister of the time. And so what had happened is she started to display some really questionable actions that, you know, that he raised some eyebrows and he thought that this is some questionable stuff here. Let me start journaling it. So what he did was he started journaling it day by day by day, what was happening to this girl and why it was happening. And she had some really bizarre accounts where she had accounts where she was trying to throw herself in the fire. They had to rescue her a couple times from throwing herself into the fire, the fireplace or the hearth, at that time. And so what would happen is they would try to like pin her down, like 3 or 4 guys would try to pin her down, but she would throw them off. She had supernatural strength. And this happened a couple times. One time it was 3 or 4 guys, and other times it was 5 or 6 guys. And this is a 16-year-old girl. Yeah. She's a waif, right? And she's like, you know, and she
should only take
off
one dude, a single. I mean, this is repeated though, right? I mean, you see this when a small frail person, whether it be an old lady, a small child, a girl, they're able to overpower many strong or at least like well-built dudes.
It's weird. Yeah. It talks about her. It starts off small, but like laughter, but the laughter had like a strange chord to Samuel, was the minister's name. And so and then it just progressed, and then she would fall onto the ground with this kind of like hysterical laughter, but then go into like seizures. So there's a lot of seizures episodes, and then there is she was screaming and howling and going through the home and, you know, just overturning everything. She was a real, you know, nightmare. And then there was one scene, I don't want to give away all the scenes, but there scene where she was, her head was back and her tongue was curled back into her mouth, semicircular, and it was stuck like that. She stood like that for 5 days, and they tried to pry her tongue out, but they couldn't because it was like hard as iron, and it wouldn't let go. And and so that was just one of the strange episodes that this maid was going through. And the whole thing was she a servant of the devil or not? Did she sign the devil's book? Was the mystery. And so, and this is what they're kind of trying to get at, and you'll read about it in the book. Was she a servant of Satan or was she not? And why were these things happening to her? And they, lo and behold, they were happening to her way longer than what people had thought since a kid.
Man, it's not, you see this in pop culture. Like, you know, I don't know if these, you know, writers and directors of these movies, you know, take, you know, borrow from like these real historical possessions, but I'm thinking of like The Last Exorcism, how she's leaning back, like you just described. They didn't show her tongue in that, but I mean, like, it's just wild to think someone's staying like this for 5 days. And this is well accounted historical stuff.
Fully documented. And he wrote this, you have to understand, like, okay, this is no dumb guy.
Sure.
Right. This is no dumb hick in the woods. This is a graduate of Harvard who later became the president of Harvard. So this is no dumb hick. This is like the most influential man in the colonies. In fact, this man actually, because of this case, was instrumental in trying to stop the Salem witch trials. Because they were trying to use spectral evidence as, you know, like a ghost, like someone's ghost came and attacked me, right?
Sure.
And they were going to allow that in court.
A lot of rumors too, right?
Well, yeah. So he was one of the only few reasonable ones who stood up, and he's like, listen, you cannot allow this as evidence in court. You know, this is going to, you know, this is going to scar somebody for the rest of their, you know, rest of their life. They're never going to get rid of this witch. Because at the time, it was preferred to be called a murderer than a witch.
Wow.
That's how bad it was to be called a witch. It would have ruined someone's reputation forever. And so this is what he fought against. And so, you know, people think that they're all like these crazy. No, this guy was, you know, clear-minded and reasonable and rational, right? So, and I said all that to say is that he wrote this account so he could give it to the minister at Boston, who was Increase Mather, who was the rock star of his day. In fact, when he died, they had a funeral services for like a month. They mourned for like a month. This is how influential he was to the early colonies. And so these are not dumb people.
Yeah.
And this was happening in the very early stages of American history.
Yeah, it's insane. Do you feel that there was more of this kind of stuff going on back in the old days, like before electricity was around? Do you think electricity has anything to do with the effect of like the paranormal kind of stuff?
Well, we have hundreds of thousands of cases happening across Europe. So, you know, and so when people came across escaping the religious persecution, what they came over for was to establish, they were being murdered for their faith and everything, the Church of England and everything like that, right? And so they were trying to escape this persecution. And what they came over to America for, and this is completely fully documented, and they don't teach you in history books and in school. The reason they came over was to establish a land for the glory of God like the world had never seen. And you can read that actually on the Mayflower Compact. and you can read that in the writings of these early historical figures, that was the reason why they came to America. So that's the roots of America. So when they came over to America, this basically is like God stepping onto the new continent, right? Yeah. And we talked about like the demonic uprising. I think that's what happened when these people came over to the new land. This upset the rule of darkness and satanic forces. And then you start to see an uprising of these things.
Man, it's crazy to say that. I've been looking into some stuff with the like the New World Order and the Old World Order and stuff like that, right? Mm-hmm. And you hear all the time in this conspiracy circle that I'm in that the New World Order has always been a bad thing. And for me, what I've come to find, at least, and I don't know if I'm 100% right on this, but it seems like the New World Order is exactly what you're talking about there. And it was meant to be a good thing. It was meant to break out of the old world order, the old demonic world order, if you want to call it that. Mm. And then the old world order infiltrates the new world order. So the new world order is just the same as the old world order at this point. But it started off with good intentions, it sounds like.
Well, I think the new world order as we know it, I think there's a real evil danger to it. And what they want to do is, you know, control and to rule over and to dominate over. That's a demonic thing. But what these people came over for was to form, you know, a nation for the glory of God.
And I feel like they meant like, so I don't know if I explained it well enough, but like the old world order is very, very tyrannical and very ruling over people, right?
You're talking about back in England before at the persecution. It was very bloody. Yeah, it was very bloody. A lot of lives lost. And people came, you know, people fled, you know, and that's why we came here. And it was 1622, when we started coming over, and the minister that I'm talking about, his father came over on one of the ships and, from Kent, England, and Samuel himself was the first generation American. He actually baptized Benjamin Franklin. So he had these ties that reached into the future of America.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And so, I mean, are there any Masonic ties here with those folks?
Oh, no, not at all.
No?
No.
Okay. Because, I mean, you know, with Benjamin Franklin and things like that, I had to ask, you know?
Well, no, I mean, yeah. Well, he was a bit, you know, he was young.
Franklin was at that time.
Yeah.
Okay. So he's not part of the Nine Sisters Lodge or any of that stuff yet.
Not at the time, no.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, no, I mean, this stuff is so interesting. There's so much about history that we just don't know. We're not told about this stuff.
Well, that's why I'm like a historian. In order to write this stuff, you really have to dig deep into history. And for this story, I reached back 350 years. And so I really dug deep into, you know, real like yellowed parchment with black flowing script in libraries with books you can't touch, like it's from the 1600s. And so when we talk about like a really researched in-depth story, I did as much work as you possibly can do and to dig up and unearth this story to make it as real as possible and to bring you into this society at the time, because you have to understand the thinking, you have to understand the customs, you have to understand the reasons, you have to understand the religion, and you have to understand everything around it plays into this story. That's why it took a long time to write the story, because the level of research that was needed to bring it and make it into as best possible story could be.
With accuracy too. I mean, not just going based off the history books, like you said. That's incredible. Yeah. Do you think that a single legitimate witch was killed during these witch trials? I mean, you kind of just briefly mentioned the witch trials. Do you think that?
Yeah, I do. I do. So it's this start. I guess when you could talk about the Salem trials.
Sure.
The first witch panic didn't happen in Salem. The first witch panic was actually the 1650s in Connecticut. But we'll talk about the Salem witch trials, because that's what everyone's familiar with. So what had happened, Samuel Parris, I think it was his name, was the minister, and something happened to his kids where they, you know, they, the strange things were happening to his kids. I think that was real, because I think that was an attack upon the kids, a demonic assault, like what we've been talking about.
Yeah.
And I think that was real, right? And so was there a real witch in that trial? I don't know for sure, but I know Tituba in that scenario, she was making cakes with urine, which is a witchcrafty thing, right? Yeah. She wasn't a witch in the sense that you would think is a witch, but it was a witchcraft practice. So she admitted to doing these things. She was from the Caribbean, and this was like natural for her to do it. So, yeah. So I think what happened was, as it started to go along, people started accusing people. These three girls actually started accusing people. They started accusing people like Rebecca Nurse, who was like in her 70s or 80s, who was a really godly woman who literally almost fell off her chair when they came to her house to tell her that she was being accused of witchcraft. Right. And so they've accused some innocent people. Some things came from land rights, or some things came from jealousies, and some things came from bad blood. And so this was a way for people to, you know, to enact revenge against people, right?
I don't like her. I'm going to say she's a witch. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, 100%. So there was a lot of that. Was there a real witch in this case? I don't know, but I know that those kids did suffer something really demonic. That was the start of it.
Well, guys, thanks for listening so far. To get the rest of it, head to patreon.com/dangerousworldpodcast. Me and MR Gorga in this episode finish that story that he was going into right there. We talk about the risks of white and black magic, and he says you should stay away from both. I can't say I disagree. And he also gets into a very prophetic dream that he had about 20 years ago or so, relating to the political sphere of America today. Awesome stuff. Can't thank him enough. Head to patreon.com/dangerousworldpodcast. You get about 40 minutes here and an additional 100 episodes in their full version. Thanks so much, guys.